It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, boppers and film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which someday we'll update at.
Yep, filmsociology.tumblr.com.
You should see us in the studio when we play music from the Warriors. We need a Fender Rhodes in studio, just for the heck of it. And the man willing to play that Fender Rhodes, that's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
He's got his Colts Blue on for the weekend.
Right.
I have to wait till Monday.
Your okay. Lions.
My Lions. We
alternate color of blue.
Yeah. The other color of blue.
Yeah.
The one that doesn't matter.
I like the Lions blue.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So do I. I don't bleed it because,
nice.
Well, I'm a human being. But
and if that were the case, there'd be bigger problems.
There would be if I had blue problems. Although, remember Nigel Tufnel in Spinal Tap explains, you notice how your vein looks blue under the skin. So the blood could be, no, it's not. Really hoping Eli Manning doesn't have a good game on Monday. He's capable of it since he had such a bad last season. So we will see. Anyway, there's the football portion of the film talk show. Should we get the food taken away?
Yeah, let's talk about snacks.
Yeah. have you been experimenting with stuff in the kitchen? Because folks, you don't know, Mr. Slagle here actually does pay attention to the recipes on Food Network as well, not just the beautiful female chefs.
The latest thing in the culinary world of the Slagles is my. I guess understanding and maybe mastery of an Alton Brown chicken wing recipe.
Ah, yes. And what kind of sauce or rub?
Typically just do buffalo sauce, did a Jamaican jerk rub that didn't really translate well a couple weeks ago. I think I needed a sauce on it, didn't have a sauce or a glaze, just had the rub. That didn't really work well.
Ah.
Yeah. But teriyaki, buffalo.
It's good.
Barbecue.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these you can eat while watching movies as well. So that's.
These snacks are not.
These snacks are just not sports centric.
No.
And.
They're not.
And I know people love. Hi, Jim. When I have food people on the film show, we might have a guest in the next. Hopefully in the next several weeks.
Now, is this what you were telling me about last week?
It is something that we were talking about last week, which I really can't go on air with. I know it's a cliffhanger. And, of course, next month, our guy, our Food Network correspondent, Robert Irvine, is going to be in Indiana.
Oh, nice. Where?
In Evansville.
Oh. That's a long way.
It is a long way. He's going to be in Evansville and Louisville. He's doing back-to-back shows. So we might. That's just
cool.
A good excuse to have him back on the show to talk stuff. Anyway. Why are we, besides the fact that we always talk about food and sports on the film show, this week is kind of slow in the film world. Nothing major of note is opening at the multiplexes, and if you picked up today's Indianapolis Star, you know that because there's reviews of films that opened last week in the paper.
Oh.
A 1.5-star review for As Above, So Below, which you're so not going to see,
nope.
Mr. Slagle, and the Trip to Italy. However, if you pick up this week's Nouveau, you can read. If you could hear near Nouveau, that's a thing. Maybe we should have.
If you could hear Nouveau, you would be Bill Walton.
You heard the Nouveau. You would be, and not just the paper. He just hears Nouveau. but you can read Ed Johnsonott's review of The Last of Robin Hood with Kevin Klein, who is going to be at IU receiving an honorary degree this semester. And there's another Kevin Klein film that's going to be coming down the pipe in a little bit. But I love the headline in this week's Nouveau, Errol Flynn, Statutory Rapist, because it's about his affair with a young starlet who was at the time 15. And she's played by Dakota Fanning, and Susan Sarandon plays Fanning's mom. I love cinematic gene pools. So that opens today. You can read Ed's review. You can also check out the review of this at the Film Yap with our colleagues. But there's another film opening today. So little idea. I missed the screening for Last of Robin Hood because I'm in rehearsal for a show. And so what happens is if I can see something late Thursday night or first thing Friday morning, I can still come on the show and talk to you folks, you kind folks, about it. And ladies and gentlemen, I saw a doozy today. So, and this is the setup where, Kobe, I need you to get the trailer set up for this. So as I open up the first screening of The Last of Robin Hood wasn't until late into the, or I should say early afternoon, which is late for me. To fit this show, so that wasn't going to work. But anyway, I checked out the screening of one of my usual hangouts, AMC Castleton, and usually there is a Bollywood film of some kind, and that didn't fit the schedule. But they actually do have foreign films, not just Indian films. I think they have films from Mexico and Spain and several countries in Asia. So that's kind of cool that they have one screen devoted to world cinema. You just have to look it up. And anyway, there was a film that opened today. I think this is the only theater it's being shown in. And it's a film called The Identical. And the way it is pushed is it's pushed as from, I think, one of the producers of God Is Not Dead. You get turn on. You've heard of this, Mr. Slagle?
Seth Green's in this?
Yes, Seth Green is Ray. So the name people. So here it is, folks. It's a piece of spiritual cinema.
It's Seth Green,
Ray Liotta, Joey Pantoliano, Ashley Judd. Those are the name people in this. The main star is a guy named Blake Rayne, who is, yes, BlakeRayne. He is a Nashville musician, studio musician, and singer, who, as I found out doing research, won a Columbus, Ohio Elvis impersonator contest in 1998. And this is his only credit so far. The writer, and it's the first credit of the director, the writer of this also did the screenplay for Space Cowboys, the Clint Eastwood astronaut movie with James Garner, Tommy Lee Jones, and Donald Sutherland. Kobe, do you have the trailer for The Identical queued up and ready to go?
I do.
I want to play this. You know what? I'm going to let's not talk over it. I want to play the trailer as is, and then we'll talk about
it. Okay, here we go.
All right, here we go.
You sure your daddy's okay with this?
Oh, yeah, man. I take his car all the time.
Hey! You fuck, get back here!
Give me a song, Mr. Music Man.
Where do preachers get learn to dance the way that you do?
Something just happens to me when I hear music. I gotta feel it in my feet.
Dance, dance, dance. Whatever it is, it's a good thing, Ron Ray. Dance, dance,
dance. Sing songs, write songs. That's all I want to do. It's boogie, boogie, rock and roll.
Get out of here! A honky-tonk, you're going into the ministry.
Your father tells me you got a mind to follow in his footsteps.
Mama, I don't hear this call Daddy wants me to hear.
It's a man's job, learning to stand in his truth.
Drex Hemsworth, Ryan cannot hear.
It's in every storefront in town.
Who is this?
Anybody ever tell you you look just like Drexel Hemsworth?
Are you guys related or something?
No, not related. You're the girl for me,
yeah.
Yeah. Ryan, you're about as close to the real thing as I've ever seen.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I think this boy's a star.
I've signed Ryan Wade, the identical.
Just want to work some of my songs.
Nobody wants to hear your song. You're a pretender, buddy. You are nothing.
It's time to tell him the truth. He has a right to know who he is.
I'm mighty proud of you, son.
The call you heard was for your life, not mine.
You're breaking my heart, boy.
You looking for something, aren't you?
It's not about the money. I'm tired of being somebody I'm not.
I was alone.
Made me believe.
Why are there always police involved with you and me?
You called the cops on me? There's something about you.
Mr. Slagle, You watched the trailer as it was being aired. We just played it just now. That's from The Identical. Your thoughts on what you just watched?
Looks a lot like a country version of the Mark Wahlberg movie Rockstar.
Interesting. It's a fascinating choice. Yeah, it is. I will say this. I know we kind of I kind of snark at. At films, I'm not. I mean, not the we is mean Kobe and I. Some
you
of the
know,
filmmakers,
the royal we, man.
But the kind of spiritual based films, God Is Not Dead, and those pictures, there's a little bit of that, and there is not. You are not hit over the head as hard as say maybe a Tyler Perry movie or some others where church is the only thing that will save you and make you into a better person. Although the Ray Liotta character, of course, represents the church. He is Elmer Gantry without the corruption, fire and brimstone. Because when you have Ray Liotta in a film, you have to have at least one scene where he loses his mind. And in this case, he does it at the pulpit. So. For those who don't know, Elvis Presley had a twin brother who died at birth. It was a stillborn. And that always was a part of his, as people said in the Elvis circles, that was always on his mind, obviously. This film has taken great liberties of lifting material from the Elvis Presley story as far as first starting with the idea of having identical twins. In this film, we have a poor family who has given birth to twin boys. One of them is given to traveling preacher Ray Liotta and his wife, who cannot have children, played by Ashley Judd. One becomes a very popular rock and roll singer from the 50s who's not Elvis. No.
Yeah.
Not Elvis. And then you have another guy who is... working as a regular guy, and he winds up singing, and of course he's always mistaken for the guy who's not Elvis all the time. See where this is going? A little bit. So we have these kind of parallel lives, and will the brothers reunite? But it's not Elvis, even though this one singer
looks like him, sounds like him,
Kind of goes to the army like him, makes bad beach movies in the 60s like him. Although I will say, without this really isn't a spoiler alert, doesn't die the same way Elvis does. More like Lynyrd Skynyrd. And it's 1972, not 1977, or Buddy Holly, I guess, if you want to stick into the 50s. And so the thing about this picture, and this film is unintentionally hilarious. Is it not quite in the same caliber as The Room?
Well, not many things are.
But one of the things, I remember there was an article, and we talked about this on the show a while back, of what is wrong with spiritual-based movies, with faith-based movies. One of them is it's kind of preaching to the choir. And the other one is usually they're not done really well. And you heard the music in this. There are...
That was one of Richard Probst's kind of...
He agrees with that idea. That they're usually not well made, and even if you have name actors like Leota and Judd and Seth Green is in this, and it spans, oh my gosh, about 20 years. He's still able to, I guess, play a teenager in the '50s portions, and that's the other thing, because he plays a teenager in the '50s portion, as does Blake Rain, who, like Denny in the Room, looks like he's 30. So I guess you just kind of, I guess if you put a bow on a girl, then in a flashback, then she's younger.
Yeah,
like in Death of a Salesman. But also the fact that there are songs in this, and there are styles of music that are not in this. There's a song that's in the 70s that sound like it was made in the late 80s.
And we know that you have a big problem with that.
I do have a big problem. If you're gonna, you have to be, I think, accurate. Not just of the style, but the era. There is a scene where the character, the preacher's son, who goes to, get ready, Kobe, goes to a juke joint. Mm. That's where the black people drink and play blues, for those who don't know. And that's in this. And the style, and of course, it's the biggest juke joint stage I've ever seen. If you've ever seen Mississippi juke joints, they're about as big as the studio. For those who've ever seen our studio, you know, it doesn't look like the Vogue.
Yeah.
And so there's and of course, the music in this is really polished from start to finish. Don't even attempt to make a kind of raw club as is feel. No attempt whatsoever. And you have buildings that don't have texture. There's a scene where the kid gets a job at a mechanic. The preacher's son gets a job at a mechanic, and there's no texturing whatsoever. It looks like Fake Town, New Mexico in Thor, that kind of generic town that was just built to be destroyed by Thor. This one, they just didn't put a whole lot of effort into this, except for lifting the story of Elvis Presley's biography and using it for their own ill-gotten gains. I'm sorry, faith-gotten games. But yes, we have the preacher who wants his son to be a preacher, but he wants to sing, and of course he wants to sing the devil's music. But you think there's nothing wrong with that? There's footage of the kid who becomes the famous singer on a show. I think it's the Steve Douglas show, not the Mike Douglas show, not the Ed Sullivan show.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just
it's dumb.
It's look. I'm as big a fan as anybody else of the musical Dreamgirls. But Dreamgirls knew, and I think everybody else knew, that they were lifting from the Supremes. Oh, it's so not the Supremes. Oh, that guy is so not Berry Gordy, so not Marvin Gaye. But this one tries to hide that a little bit. They do mention Elvis like by name. I think the last 20 minutes of the film it is brought up. But yeah, the preacher's kid winds up becoming a famous impersonator of the not Elvis character. So there's a little, I don't know, Beatlemania or, yeah, like you said, Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg. Mm-hmm. That's the one where it's based on the story of a guy who was it's not Judas Priest, but it's a lot like Judas Priest. It's just... It cracked me up. There's so much in this. You have your and of course all the stock here. You have the angry preacher father. And I'll say this: there is one moment as I was jotting down notes. Yeah, I'm the guy with the notebook in the theater. That when the preacher's kid tells his father that he's dropping out of religious college, I was waiting for Ray Liotta to blow up because you know we expect that from Mr. Liotta. And he doesn't do that. That's probably the one saving acting about this. You have the dutiful mom played by Ashley Judd. You have the really racist police sheriff who finds underage white kids in the evil black juke joint. I mean, it's one thing after another. No music bio. Oh, but that's right. It's not a biopic. It's not about Elvis. No cliche left unturned. It's really funny. I want people to see this now because it's so ineptly made. But there's a positive message, so it's all right. By the way, you know...
No! No, 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 no!
No! No, 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 no!
Yeah. And there's the montage of them on the road playing the state fairs and you know, the evolution from the 50s to the late 60s. You know, Seth Green even mentions psychedelic rock because you have to, because it's 1967.
Because times are changing.
The times, they are a changing. Oh, God. It just cracked me up. Nobody did any research about this. Yeah, I'm telling you. So that's out there. That is out there. And of course we get to an emotional climax near the end. Guess where we, you know, because you have two separate worlds. Oh, the other great moment I should mention this is there is a contest for the sound like Drexel, the sound like the not Elvis character, and the preacher's son enters the contest. Out of nowhere, so you have these three judges. Out of nowhere, here comes the real Drexel, who looks like he borrowed stuff from Stevie Ray Vaughan's closet, with the dark sunglasses, who just wanders into the venue, sits next to the judges as this guy is performing a ballad, which doesn't sound anything from the 50s or the 60s. And they get to look at each other on stage, and then the guy who's Drexel gets up, and it's the same actor playing both roles. So that's a challenge. And he looks at the judge and says, "There's your winner." And then he goes away. He disappears. Just plot things that are dropped in to make plot things happen. It's
dumb.
It's really dumb. It cracked me up, though. It's really funny, if anything else, for that. And seeing the contest montage of people trying to sound like not Elvis, really sad. Or as I think one favorite website of ours called it, Kobe, just sad.
That is just sad.
Yeah. Hysterical. Does it sound like Jim Rome? Hysterical. Go see it, but for all the wrong reasons. I have a buddy that I have a bet with every year, and one of the wager is watching a bad movie of the winner's choice, and I think this is my pick. Yeah. It's hysterical. So yeah, I saw this, so you didn't have to, but now I want you to. So and don't worry, when this comes out on DVD and Blu-ray, which will probably be in about a month, but now that's not entirely fair because you can see stuff on demand, and that doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean it's necessarily all bad films go straight to DVD that quick. But yeah, there is that. Whew. Also happening around Indianapolis this weekend, and it started the 5th through the 7th. You have to pronounce this carefully. Horror Hound Weekend is happening at the Indianapolis Marriott East. That's 7202 East 21st Street here in Indianapolis. And some of the people are going to be there. WWE Superstar Kane. I'm reading from the ad in Nuvo. Scott Wilson from The Walking Dead. You have a couple of other people from The Walking Dead. James Remar, who, by the way, was in The Warriors as we were playing that music earlier. One of the guys from Pacific Rim. Linda Blair is going to be in town. Tyler Mane, Edward Herman, and Mads Mikkelsen, who I know most recently is Hannibal on NBC, but he was also a Bond villain in Casino Royale and other things. Great Scandinavian, that guy. But that is happening this weekend at the Marriott East through the 7th, Horror Hound Weekend. And another thing, as far as road trips we're taking to Shelbyville, Indiana, and at the Skyline Drive-In out in Shelbyville. And I'm not sure how long they're going to stay open this year. I can't remember if they get done in October or what. But this weekend they are showing Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, which we talked about last week, which is kind of a disappointment. But, you know, when you're in a drive-in and you're with friends and you have snacks and liquid, which you buy there, you don't sneak it in. You know, that's probably worth checking out at the drive-in. But they are showing on the 5th and the 6th at 10:30 p.m., from 1965, the Russ Meyer cult classic Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. And then on September 6th, so it'll be Saturday night / Saturday morning at 12:30 a.m. from 1972, French Pussycat, with Michael Cromer and Sybil Danning, a young Sybil Danning from 1972. But I believe there's also an event going on at Skyline that's a charity event. That's part of the reasons why they're showing the Russ Meyer picture as well as French Pussycat. But last week they showed the Losers, which is a biker film. So anyway, go check that out as far as information down in Shelbyville. And I guess every Sunday you can pack up the car for X amount of dollars. That's fun. Mr. Slagle.
Yes.
How are things at your alma mater?
Well, tonight, I actually started earlier this afternoon, but the festivities continue tonight at 7 o'clock, I guess. But in the Jorgensen Guest Filmmaker Lecture Series at IU Cinema, we have George Takiris today and tonight. Showing West Side Story at 7 o'clock.
He's from West Side Story, by the way. He's the one who got the Best Supporting Actor Oscar. Yeah, as Bernardo, the leader of the Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that is actually sold out tonight.
Ah.
Saturday, The Young Girls of Roquefort at 3 o'clock, followed by The Illumination at 7 o'clock in the Martin Scorsese Presents Masterpieces of Polish Cinema series. And then Sunday, September 7th, we have God Loves Uganda at 3 p.m., followed by Blood Simple from 1984 at 6:30 p.m.
Ooh, the very first Coen Brothers film, which I watched again on Blu-ray a couple weeks back. Have you seen that?
I have not.
You're a Coen's fan. Well, besides Big Lebowski, that's
seen Raising Arizona. Reading Raising Arizona.
Fargo.
Nope.
You haven't seen Fargo?
Not seen Fargo.
Oh, we need to fix that. We'll fix that. We'll fix that. Wow. Okay. Well, we'll check that out. Oh, I'm sorry. I should correct myself. It's not from the producers of God's Not Dead for The Identical. It's Freestyle Entertainment. It's the studio, I guess, that created that. Okay. Also happening at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, September 6th at 7:30 p.m. The 1925 Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
With an 18-piece orchestra, live singers, and the theater organist performing an original score by Phil Beeman of the 1925 Lon Chaney Phantom of the Opera. So you get a full show.
Really?
Yes, really. The wheels are moving in Mr. Slagle's head. He's going to call.
So does that mean there's no bump, 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 bump,
No, it's not. It's not Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Right.
Yeah,
because
no,
it's from
1925.
So that would be totally
not musical.
Totally different.
It would be totally different. Now you want to go, right?
That's interesting.
Does Fair Sweet Bianca like the Andrew Lloyd Webber Phantom of the Opera?
Loves Phantom of the Opera.
Loves it.
Loves.
Really,
Phantom of the Opera,
Kayla
yes.
Jackson, you have a new buddy. that bombastic, not subtled score that is Andrew Lloyd Webber, featuring the power rock singing prowess of one Gerard Butler. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. Let me guess. She's not going to be happy with my tone of voice. Why are you making fun of it? Text from Fair Sweet Bianca in 3, 2, 1.
Oh, man. Where's the...
What? Oh, you had something?
My
haterade?
Oh, I'm in the wrong folder here. Yeah.
I know. We need to... I'm sorry. We'll have our technical production meeting right now. Yeah, we got to fix those folders. Because I think I have a set of folders and you have a set of folders.
Yeah, I know. We need to consolidate.
Yeah, we do need to consolidate.
Figure out what all we got going on.
There you go. All right. You know what? We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I have a chat with Purdue University film professor Jason Doty, who has an event going on campus next week that involves technology and cinema. And he also has a screenplay that we talk about a little bit. Then we'll get to some titles on DVD and Blu-ray. And we have a couple dead people we like because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. And much, much more. So stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
there. I'm Claire Robinson, and I'm so excited to be talking to Film Sociology on WFYI in Indianapolis.
I got a tweet from her this week.
Aren't you special?
Your girl. Our girl, Claire Robinson. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. I'll have my chat with Purdue University film professor Jason Doty in a little bit, but we're kind of breaking format here a little bit. In studio with us for just a couple of minutes, Film Sociology Alumni Emeritus and the very first producer, engineer of this show, Melissa Davis, is in studio. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Kobe.
Hi.
Now, I bring her in for a couple of reasons. One, because, well, it's always fun to have her in studio. And there was a period where she was on the air when we were, she was on the air on HD1 when we were, when we're doing this show. So occasionally she'd kind of run in and do drive-by reviews, like burlesque or something like that. And I remember I caught flack because I started Dead People We Like. We did not have that title then. I always remember this. I started with the screenwriter of On the Waterfront before I talked about John Hughes, and that made her very angry. Mm. But as far as Dead People We Like, and I know Joan Rivers passed away this week. Mm. And for the film show, not a big filmography, but I do actually remember at the Renaissance Center in Detroit, I saw it in the multiplexes, the film she directed called Rabbit Test.
Wow.
Which featured Billy Crystal as the world's first pregnant man. Have you seen this?
No, and I didn't know that she directed that.
She directed this. Wow. Now, then again, this was, I think, a couple of years after Nancy Walker directed the musical Can't Stop the Music. Not making this up. But mm-hmm. I will give you a couple minutes to talk about Joan's impact on comedy, especially for the ladies.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, you can't measure it, you know. Wasn't she one of the very first female stand-up comics?
I was thinking, it was like her and Diller, but as far as being able to take it, you know, dish it out and take it mm-hmm. like the best of, with the best of them, especially being, you know, Still, even females today in comedy is kind of, it can be a very male-centric business.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking Moms Mabley, Phyllis Diller, and who else? Joan. You know, I mm-hmm. mean, those were the pioneers. And what she did also, I think she made it okay to be a pretty woman in comedy. She let women could be attractive in comedy or glamorous, you know, and even right. though she joked about her looks, although she was very attractive.
If you look back in the early days, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. There's another film she did, well, she had a small part in it. It's from 1968 called The Swimmer, starring Burt Lancaster. And it's based on which I think was a kind of a very acclaimed novel at that time. But he plays a guy who is basically going from swimming pool to return back home. And as to each pool that he visits, he come across somebody and you find out more about his character. And there's kind of a secret that is unveiled. And there's a scene where there's a big pool party and Joan Rivers had a scene with Lancaster, which I'm sure she didn't mind looking at tan shirtless Burt Lancaster all day long.
That would be all right. And, you know, another film I'm thinking of, Spaceballs. You know, yep, she was the voice.
Right, of the not C-3PO character.
Yeah, and she was so good in that. Like, I remember watching that as a small child, and I really, for some reason, that voice just stuck in my head. Very recognizable, but I didn't know who she was exactly at that time because I was, you know, 5.
Thanks.
Sorry. Kobe was not born.
Not yet. Did your dad have the twinkle in his eye at that time or no?
It's like, what's Spaceballs?
No, he knows what Spaceballs is. Come on.
I just remember her in that movie. And I think, you know, Albert Brooks recognizing that she would be good for that role was very thoughtful. Mel Brooks. I'm sorry.
Now you bring that. I wish I could have seen Joan Rivers and Albert Brooks in a movie together.
I'm glad you could correct me on that. And I was like, as I was saying it, I'm like, I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, I just, it's sad that she's gone because, you know, even though she had a long and full life and an amazing life, the kind of life that anyone in entertainment I think would love to have, it didn't seem like she was done. And that's kind of, Sarah Silverman posted that on her Facebook page.
Right.
She wasn't done yet, and she hadn't stepped out of the public eye, and she didn't need to. You know, she was still mm-hmm. saying crazy, amazing, funny things, and some recent not so funny things.
Walking off of an interview. Yeah, I know. And I will say this, because I know, because I don't have my Haterade mug with me, but you know, her on the red carpet with her daughter and the reality show with her daughter, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, sure.
And but yeah, she was still sharp. And I know there was a documentary made about her a couple years back. There you go.
She knew how to stay in the game. You know what I mean?
Right.
And to do that at 81, who else do you know who's 81 who is still sharp, still selling out, you know, stand up? I can't even think of anybody. You
Correct.
Know what I mean? I think George Carlin was the last one to do it.
And he was still sharp.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, she was so... She was just so sharp still, and she had her In Bed with Joan series,
mm-hmm.
and she was so funny on that. And so it's kind of, although she had a great long life, it's still kind of like, you know?
Because there was still fire in the belly. There was still fuel
still
in the tank.
To go, yeah. But, I mean, you know, it seems like she went peacefully, and so, you know, that's what it is, what it is. But you cannot even measure the amount of the impact that she had on comedy for women and men and everyone. And she's super, super funny. Like, it's great.
There you go.
Like.
Wow, you said like on the NPR
like
show. That's
too
that's
much.
Terrific. So here's your product. Now you have to find Rabbit Test. Good luck with
okay.
that.
How did you end up seeing that? Like, what made you go see that in the theater? You were probably like 10.
I was probably 10. It was probably the only PG. I think it was PG. And I knew Billy Crystal. Billy, because it was the guy from Soap.
Okay.
It was the funny guy from Soap. So
was it a good movie?
What I remember of it, not particularly. But but I thought it was interesting that a woman was directing. And I remember, if you look up, I'm sure you could find the Rabbit Test trailer. And she's in the trailer talking about it. So... Yeah. Why do we see whatever we see when we're 10?
Yeah, right.
So, but no. But go search for that. That's your project, and you have to report that back.
Pregnant man. Oh, can I put one more?
Absolutely.
Little tidbit?
Why not?
The first and still remaining first and last female network nighttime host, Chelsea Handler.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Still,
that's right.
That's still all of male centric late night. And gosh, wouldn't it be great to see a woman hosting late night? She's the only one that's done it so far, and we hope someone breaks her record there. Because,
Tina Fey,
hey,
Amy Poehler.
I mean, there's so many. Wanda Sykes, who was kind of getting.
I thought she had. Didn't she have a daytime talk show, or was that or was it cable?
I think it was
a
nighttime cable thing. But you know, I think there's still room to that, and she'll be the first forever. You know, and that's pretty awesome.
All right. Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate it. No, and you're not our women's studies cinema correspondent.
Women's
you can talk
studies
about,
minor at Ball State.
Yeah, you were a women's studies minor. But but no, I figured you would have a lot to say about Joan, so there you go.
She's lovely.
Thank you.
Yes. See you guys.
All right. We are going to now get to my chat with film professor Jason Doty, and he is part of an event that is called Dawn or Doom, the New Technology Explosion. And you can go to purdue.edu for more information. And here's my chat with film professor Jason Doty. So, Jason, tell us about Dawn or Doom, the New Technology Explosion. How did this come about, besides technology?
So in regards to the event itself?
Correct, yeah. No, I'm not asking you to do the history of Dawn and Doom and technology. But
well... the event came about through a couple of departments here at the university, ITAP, Information Technology and Convocations, came together and decided they want to put on an event that featured this idea of how we're dealing with technology in modern society. In my role, I kind of came in, I was helped out as far as just selecting films that deal with these topics, and we just And then to screen a few of those films during the course of the week before the actual event, which happens on Thursday the 18th.
Okay. And could tell us some of the films that were selected for the series.
We're showing three films Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday outside in front of the Union. Those are Jurassic Park, AI, and Transcendence. And then we're showing three films the day of the event in a tent venue on campus, and those are Tron, Gattaca, and Dr. Strangelove.
I say, what didn't make the cut? And I mean, how much was there a committee to select the films?
Yeah, it was kind of informal. Two factors kind of really pared down the list. One was it had to be PG-13 or less. So a lot of the R-rated films that deal with technology, like Matrix, Terminator, kind of fell by the wayside, Blade Runner being another one. So there's quite a few of those films that we just, because they were rated R, we couldn't screen because it's an outdoor venue, and and it would be, we don't want people walking through campus and, you know, and then rated R film.
Wait a minute, don't you remember the R-rated drive-in movies back when we were kids?
Yeah, I guess, but those would be walled off a little bit, I guess. It's going to be out in the open, so.
You don't want Mitch walking around seeing that, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, that would probably, that'd be good for the university.
What the?
Yeah. So that, and the other issue was like what was available, because you had to pay rental fees or whatever. So some of the films that we just weren't available. Like I think one of them was Planet of the Apes, not the one that just came out this summer, but a couple years ago.
The Tim Burton version?
No, The Rise. It would be The Rise.
Okay,
the
that one. There you go. That's better. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, the Tim Burton one. Yeah.
don't inflict that on the students.
No. We won't mention that one. So that's pretty. That's how the list came about, or how we trimmed down some of the films.
Okay, I was wondering. For those who don't know, can you talk about the connection between the three films that are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday afternoon trilogy?
Well, the connection is this: so the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, our objective was like, let's get some films that have some mass appeal that were kind of bigger box office hits, right?
Well, except for Transcendence.
Yeah, except for Transcendence we chose because we thought it's a newer film, it's more recent, so we might get more people to come. I mean, I think everybody's seen Jurassic Park by now.
Right.
So the idea was, let's try and get a newer film. I just saw Transcendence a couple days ago, and you were right, it is not a very good movie, although it does bring up a lot of interesting points about technology and singularity, so a lot of the stuff that's going to be talked at the conference.
Right.
So that's good. It's a good conversation starter. As far as an entertaining movie, it kind of falls apart about an hour into it. It really... it's a bit of a mess of a movie. So the three films that are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we said, let's get something, you know, either newer or bigger box office to get the biggest audience. And then for the Thursday, we tried to do a little bit more of an eclectic mix. We have Doctor Strangelove and Tron and then Gattaca. So not necessarily the big box office hits, but something, just a little bit of variety. Plus, we got some older films in there as well.
Right. I think this is for the record. It's the original Tron, correct?
Yes, the original Tron. The other Tron, I did not get through the first 40 minutes. Kind of shut it off.
Well, Jeff Bridges did, so that's all right.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that it's a great piece. It's a period piece. I mean, as far as from a technological standpoint and video, and as far as video games.
Oh yeah, it works on a bunch of different levels because not only are you looking at the technology as it exists in 1982 with computers, and you're also looking at the technology of special effects and movies that existed in 1982.
Right.
And obviously, it's not a literal interpretation as far as we're not getting literally sucked into video games, but the idea is video games are becoming more immersive, right? We're getting, you know, with virtual 3D reality video games and all those different components. So there are some technology issues that are brought up, not, again, in a literal interpretation, more of an allegorical interpretation in Tron.
And a little easier than, say, Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, and Lawnmower Man's not exactly, again, the quality of them. Although Tron, I'm watching it again right now.
Yeah?
And it's not known for, I would say that it's not known for its witty, sharp dialogue. Let's just put it that way. It's mostly known for its kind of really interesting special effects and the look that they obtain in the film.
Yeah, I think the quote-unquote human portions, even with Jeff Bridges and Cindy Morgan and Bruce Boxleitner, not that's not what you're there for.
No. Although Bridges, he's the best one to pull off of some of the dialogue. It's just, it's really wooden, some of the lines.
Yeah, but yeah. I still remember from Tron, the sequel, where he was forced to say, I think, something along the lines of, it is your destiny. I went, really? You got a lot of money for that, right?
Yeah, well, you know.
It happens.
But the thing is, Tron's interesting. A huge failure when it came out, right?
Right.
And then it kind of had this cult following on video through the 80s and 90s. And obviously, they were, the people at Disney thought, well, we should make a sequel. This is an obvious sequel. There's this huge audience out there. And they didn't show up.
And I think also the fact that, you know, Bridges' career was at a high point and thought, what the heck? Let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yes, from a technological standpoint, the second film looked cool, but
the technology actually caught up with the idea of it.
Right.
I mean, I think the idea was beyond what they could do, and it's fun to watch just to see what they were able to pull off. And I read, you know, one of the things I read about the making of the film. So the computer they used to create the animation had 2 megabytes of memory and a total storage capacity of 330 megabytes, which is nothing. It's amazing they were able to do any kind of computer animation in the film.
And as an old person, I say kudos for showing a new generation Dr. Strangelove. I did this with my daughter this summer.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Strangelove is an incredible comedy. I mean, it's just, yep. George C. Scott in that movie is unbelievable.
And he didn't get a chance to do comedy a whole lot.
No, but he was so good in that movie. And I guess Kubrick, the story is that, so George C. Scott would do a take very understated. He played his role very straight.
Yep.
And then Kubrick was like, well, really go for it and really push it to the edge. And so
he kept the cartoon cuts,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, Kubrick took everyone, and George C. Scott was livid about that. But it's a great film, and again, the technology is probably not as front and center as some of the other films, but what you're dealing with there is obviously you have this huge bureaucratic system, the government, and they have this incredible power, and how, I guess, a virus, you could call it, the crazy general in that movie, can you know, unsettle the whole balance and create this huge catastrophe that, I mean, I don't know if it resonates as far as today. I mean, I would hope we'd have enough, you know, stop measures in place that would prevent something like that. But there is some kind of correlation as far as the government and the NSA and how they're able to invade people's privacy and those type of things. So there is some connection there.
Yeah, and I think sometime you have to do the fail-safe Dr. Strangelove double feature, especially to show them the serious part and the silly
fail-safe
part.
Yeah, fail-safe was on the list, but didn't make the cut. They went with they thought two movies from the 60s would have been.
Oh, those
kids.
So we
just went with Dr. Strangelove.
Black and white, made before they were born, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I would say, did War Games almost make the final cut?
Yeah, War Games is close. We went with Tron. Good. I thought War Games might have been a little closer to Strange. We went a little variety, so we thought we'd go with Tron.
And like it or not, I mean, speaking of Kubrick, I think there could be a good discussion on with AI on what Kubrick wanted and what Spielberg did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's Kubrick's involvement in the project's fascinating. I mean, he was waiting for someone to create a robot to actually play the role. I mean, that's why he waited so long to make it. He was waiting for the technology to catch up, and then he investigated using CGI after he saw Jurassic Park. And I think it just, you know, obviously he felt at a certain point that the movie lent itself more to Spielberg's sensibilities and actually gave it to him before he died a few years before.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a really interesting film because it's one of the few films we're actually watching. We're watching the film through the perspective of the actual robot. Where most films, it's going to be human versus technology. We're with the human. They've created this technology. It's either gotten out of control, now it's about survival or regaining control. Whereas this film takes a completely different viewpoint, where we're viewing this through the whole from the AI's perspective, which is interesting in itself to think about.
And you, like it or not, you have good timing with Jurassic Park with the passing of Sir Richard Attenborough.
Yeah, yeah. And also, there's a sequel coming out next summer, so it's, it's just a phenomenal movie that everybody likes to watch. And I just rewatched it again. I forgot how good it was. It's a really fun movie to watch. And another interesting thing is to look at the technology as far as computers that were available in 93. There's a scene where the girl walks she goes in the Jeep, she says, oh, cool, an interactive CD-ROM. And I'm sure that'll get a big laugh.
Yep.
Yeah, from the audience. So, yeah, there's that part, that aspect to the movie as well.
Shifting gears just a little bit, I have a colleague down in Georgia who is who's been writing about, I thought of this genre, kind of subgenre, when I saw about the event at Purdue, but the paranoid 70s political thrillers. And would that have been maybe an off branch of what you folks are doing?
Like Parallax View.
Parallax View,
Three
Days of the Condor, The Conversation.
Yeah, The Conversation might, because it deals with a technology in a way of audio recording. I'm not sure Parallax View. I mean, I think the one thing we wanted to bring up was that there was some kind of technical part to it that some element to the movie. I'm trying to think of 3 Days of the Condor and Parallax View. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've seen those movies.
Okay.
But I don't think there's a technology, something with technology involved and that's integral to the plot.
I think probably more the looming aspect of it more than the technological standpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So those are excellent movies, though, by the way. Excellent movies.
That's your pledge dollars at work right
here.
Now, I also heard you just got a screenplay purchased?
Yeah, it's set up at Focus Features that happened last, it's been almost a year. It's in development.
Well, tell us about it. Come on.
It's actually, it doesn't, it's a time travel thriller.
Okay.
So it's about a desperate man who loses his wife and child in a fire, discovers he can travel back in time, one day at a time, as long as he never falls asleep.
Okay.
So if he stays awake 24 hours, he can travel back in time. He'll travel back in time 48 hours. So as long as he keeps staying awake, he keeps going back. So it's a thriller mystery. He's trying to save his wife and child.
So, and you say, when you say in development, what portion of in development are we in right now?
Oh, very. It's kind of stuck. What happened? So, I don't know if you follow industry trades, but Focus kind of blew up last fall.
Mm-hmm.
They fired the CEO. They replaced everybody. They closed the New York office. And that kind of, in the script was purchased prior to that, so it was a whole new regime coming in. And if you know anything about regime changes in Hollywood,
they want their stuff as opposed to the old stuff.
So, although the president of production, who's the guy that he's still there, so there's still hope. But when you're dealing with an original spec script, it's very difficult for it to get made unless there's somebody attached to it. And right now, the project came in. I mean, there's a producer attached to it, but there's no star, no director attached to the project. So you need an engine to motivate people to want to make it. So if Matt Damon was attached, obviously they'd be more interesting in speeding up the process. But they're taking their time, you know, and waiting and making sure the script's perfect before you go out to directors and actors. It's a heartbreaking process.
It's a hard knock life, I think a musical once sang. So.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, we will keep our fingers crossed on the screenplay, and have fun scaring people with the series.
Yeah. Thanks for the talk. I appreciate it.
That is my discussion with Purdue University film professor Jason Doty. Go to purdue.edu for more information. Good films, pretty interesting collection for Dawn or Doom, the new technology explosion, and hopefully his screenplay will get made, and hopefully we'll like it. So. I know we kind of skipped around a little bit with we had bad people, or not bad people, dead people we like. Wow. Sorry, Joan. Sorry, Melissa. Because we don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Nope.
But the other one that passed this week that counts for me, I had this thing where, can remember when the guy from Canon Pictures, Menachem Golan, had passed. And people were telling me it didn't count as far as the celebrity trilogy of deaths. I'm like, it counts to me. It's real to me. But English director Andrew McLagan passed away this week at the age of 94, did a lot of TV and movies, directed episodes of Perry Mason, Gunslinger, Rawhide, Have Gun Will Travel, but probably best known for his Western and action films in the 60s and 70s. Worked with John Wayne several times, most notably in McClintock. Also directed the Jimmy Stewart Western Shenandoah, not the musical. Films like The Rare Breed, Monkeys Go Home, The Way West, The Devil's Brigade, Bandolero. That's Dean Martin, Jimmy Stewart, and Raquel Welch in a Western. That's a good one. Hellfighters, which was the firefighting movie with John Wayne, The Undefeated, which it was John Wayne and Rock Hudson, the John Wayne film Chisholm. He also directed Cahill U.S. Marshal with John Wayne. There was also Fool's Parade. If you're a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, he directed the 1975 Joe Don Baker cop film Mitchell, which is one of my all-time favorite Mystery Science Theater treatments. And it was also the last episode with Joel Hodgson as host. The Last Hard Men, which was Charlton Heston and James Coburn. The Wild Geese, that was Richard Harris, Roger Moore. I think Laurence Olivier was in that. Folks with Roger Moore. The Sea Wolves, Sahara, bad. And that I think it was one with Brooke Shields. Also directed The Blue and the Gray, The Dirty Dozen, The Next Mission, the 1985 TV movie.
Still dirty.
Still dozening. But remember, this was, and I remember this was on the Dirty Dozen box set, and the Dirty Dozen two disc collection that Warner Brothers put out. So they put out the really good 1967 version, and then this TV movie, and also Returned from the River Kwai, still returning, still quying.
Still crossing the bridge.
All right, still, and but yeah, that didn't have William Holden or David Niven. But anyway, Andrew McLagan, not a you know, not a Coppola, not a Scorsese, not a Hitchcock, but a working guy, and I saw a lot of his work. Going back to movies that are on DVD and Blu-ray, because we don't have time. Blockbuster Video, wow, what a difference.
well, thank you, Wesley.
In case you missed it the first time,
here it is again.
Thank you, Tyler. The big title out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, because it is the return of football season, guess what the big title is? Draft Day.
Oh.
Did you wind up seeing Draft Day?
No, I did not.
Why not? You're a football fan.
Yeah, but I don't care about watching
Kevin Costner and Suits.
No. Watch the draft.
I don't want to watch the draft. Only if I could hear Jets fans screaming in agony.
No!
Great clip of that from ESPN. Hey, this, and by the way, for the record, this is a film that was made with the cooperation of the NFL. So there's kind of a toned down version. The last third of it, when we get to actual draft day, I mean the actual evening of the draft, that's interesting as far as the deals that are made. But there's so much backstory involving the Costner character, because he got Jennifer Garner pregnant, way to go, and there's his mother played by Ellen Burstyn, and he's got dad issues, and he's supposed to bury the dad's ashes, and you know, forget all that. But then again, if you had a film of my daughter likes to put it, men in suits talking. Probably not as riveting. That's a genre that my daughter's created. Men in suits talking.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's spy things. But yeah, lots of men in suits.
Non-James Bond spy things.
Right, men in suits. So spy who came in from the cold. So that's out. But there is something you got to check out. And Kobe, I'm saying that you really should rent this with Fair Sweet Bianca. The romantic comedy spoof called They Came Together with Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd, your guy Ed Helms is in it, Michael Ian Black, Bill Hader, and it's from David Wyan, the director of Wet Hot American Summer. And it makes fun of every bad romantic and good romantic comedy from the last 30 years. Where everything is exaggerated. They literally talk about how they met and how it's like a corny movie. And of course, the third character in their romance, the city of New York. And she works for a quirky independent candy company, and he works for a big corporate candy company. That's And you have all of the characters, the office sidekick and her best friend, the co-working best friend.
Yep.
And they literally, I mean, and I say literally a lot, they are addressing the characters, plot points, individual scenes. Guess what? There's a basketball scene with the guys, and they're all the central casting characters. The rebel, the married guy, and they're all like a fraction of what Paul Rudd's character is supposed to be. You know, and the romantic comedy music, there's a great video involving a ballad from Norah Jones. I mean, it's and the climax where everybody gets together and they have the big climax in public and nobody speaks. They extend that. I mean, big speeches interrupting big meetings, and no cliche is left for a fodder.
So it sounds a lot like a romantic comedy version of the movie we were talking about earlier. No cliche left unturned, but this is done well.
And it's intentionally hysterical. Yes. And it's under 80 minutes. So go rent They Came Together. It's a lot of fun. There's unintentional and intentional comedy this weekend. Go check it out. You deserve it. Here's some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Thanks to Jason Doty from Purdue University. Thanks for Melissa Davis to come in and give us a few minutes about Joan Rivers. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go Lions, please. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org.
We go. Good night, California. Good night, Fort Myers.